Good morning all. I'm Jonathan Myers, CEO of PZ Cussons, and I say thank you to you all for joining us this morning. We'd like to give you an update on our half-year results for the 6 months ending 30th of November 2020. And with me for the first time today, I'm delighted to say, is Sarah Pollard, who joins this month as our new CFO. And I'm also joined by Alan Bergin, our interim CFO, who has done a sterling job pending Sarah's arrival. And they'll be with me on the call and to answer questions afterwards. We have a short presentation. The slides are available on our website, and then we'll welcome your questions once we talk you through the slides. So turning to slide three, I'd like to start off with some key messages on our performance and the progress made by the business over the past few months. Now, many of you will recall, I started my role at the company last May under lockdown, and I find myself, along with all of you, under lockdown, and we've all had to navigate the challenges of learning how to work in new ways, and I have to say that's certainly been true for me. Not only have I not met any of you yet face-to-face, but I still have members of my own leadership team that I haven't physically met, let alone the chance to meet the broader organization. And above all, I've not yet been able to get where I've most wanted to be, which is out there in the markets, meeting consumers, walking the stores, and seeing our operations. I am confident I'll get to do it at some point, just don't ask me when. But we haven't been waiting for circumstances to change, though, before getting on with the job in hand. We set out to deliver a fast start to our financial year, as we reported at the end of our first quarter, and I'm pleased to say we've been able to maintain momentum through to the first half, reporting solid double-digit revenue growth this morning. You know, we needed to prove to ourselves, frankly, let alone others, that we could respond to fast-changing consumer and market dynamics with resilience, with pace, and with agility. And it gave us a chance to rebuild belief, and it gave me a chance to get to know the business better. Meanwhile, Alan and the team also continued to do the important job of strengthening our balance sheet, maintaining the really good year-on-year improvement demonstrated at the end of last year through the first half of this. So now we're reporting our net debt position reduced by more than £100 million versus the same point last year. And this combination of profitable revenue growth and sustained balance sheet discipline has given us the opportunity to make some choices and to invest behind the priorities in the business, most notably building stronger brands and building stronger capabilities. For example, our marketing spend increased by more than a third in the first half of this year versus last, enabling us to support and drive growth on our focus brands, and we'll say some more about that in a moment. We've also been hard at work building capabilities, both in the form of people and skills. Sarah is not the only new member of the executive leadership team to join this month. We also welcomed Kieran Hemsworth as the new leader of our UK business, and as an internal appointment to complement Sarah and Kieran joining afresh from outside, Steve Noble took over as Group Chief Supply Chain Officer also in January. In addition to Steve's recent experience at PZ Cussons, together the three of them bring experience from Unilever, from Coke, and from L'Oreal, as well as experience of turnarounds and performance improvement at smaller branded goods businesses. We've also been setting out on a journey of building stronger internal capabilities in the priority areas that we feel confident will make a difference to our performance. A good example has been the launch of a new marketing capability program, which sets out to develop the skills needed to foster bold brands and the bold leaders to do it. And we rolled out this program called Bold Brands and Bold Leaders in the second quarter, and we'll be refining and adding to it over time. So as we move from our first half into the balance of the year, we continue to work hard on a series of initiatives to maintain the momentum kicked off with our turbo boosters in the first quarter. But at the same time, we're having to remain agile in the face of significant volatility as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the consequent lockdowns in most markets, which are disrupting demand patterns, impacting some of our retail channels, and adding short-term costs. So now let me pass over to Alan, our interim CFO, to take you through a summary of the financial results.
Thanks very much, Jonathan, and good morning, everyone. I'm Alan Bergen, and we'll review the key financial highlights starting on slide 5 of your presentation. Revenue increased by 14.5% versus last year on a constant currency basis, with growth in all three of our regions. Europe and Americas was our strongest performer, with the increase driven by the performance of Carex, with demand for hand wash and hand sanitizer as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. Our focus brands, which account for over 70% of our business, grew by nearly 22%, again reflecting the growth in Carex, but encouragingly also in Morning Fresh, Cousins Baby and Saint-Tropez. Profit before tax increased by 18.2%, with growth in operating profit in each region and a lower interest charge, partially offset by an increase in central costs driven by higher investment in capabilities, including digital, marketing and people. Net debt at $18.2 million reduced due to the proceeds from the disposal, payment of the final dividend for FY20 later in the year, and continued focus across the business on managing working capital and capital expenditure. The board has maintained the interim dividend in line with last year at 2.67 pence per share. Turning to slide 6 in your pack and the metrics not covered on the previous slide. Adjusted profit at $36.4 million was 14.8% higher than last year, with growth in all key markets. There was profit growth in the UK, with beauty also increasing despite a modest reduction in revenue. Indonesia and Australia delivered an increase in operating profit with improvements in revenue and margin. Nigeria grew profit with increased revenue and improved margin, offsetting transactional foreign exchange losses. In the first half of the year, there was also increased investment in marketing and organisational capabilities. On an IFRS basis, reported operating profit was $37.8 million, with a small decline driven by the profit on our disposal of our Greek business in the last year, offsetting the growth in operating performance this year. Total free cash flow was $33 million, well ahead of last year, demonstrating the strong cash management again in the year. Let's now turn to the review of our regions, starting with Europe and Americas on slide 7 of your presentation. Revenue at $117.1 million grew by 32.7% versus last year, with growth in adjusted operating profit to $27.3 million. As a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, there has been unprecedented growth in the hand wash and especially the hand sanitizer categories in the UK. However, demand continues to remain volatile and difficult to predict, and we have also seen an increase in competition with new market entrants, especially in hand sanitizer. The COVID-19 pandemic has seen consumers, especially in the hygiene category, favour tried and trusted brands such as Carex. This has resulted in Carex maintaining the number one position in the significantly enlarged UK market for hand wash and also hand sanitizer. Carex accounts for over 37% of the hand wash market and over 27% of the hand sanitizer market. Carex has driven an improvement in UK revenue compared to last year. Imperial Leather was adversely impacted by the prioritisation of Carex, and Original Source delivered growth in its core proposition, but overall revenue declined due to a reduction in promotional activity and simplification of the portfolio. Beauty revenue was modestly down on last year, mainly due to UK high street performance adversely impacting our Sanctuary and our hair brands, Charles Worthington and Fudge. The increased focus on online, together with our hero products, led Sanctuary to offset some of the adverse impact of the UK high street. Saint-Tropez delivered good growth in the first half, with an improved performance online in both the US and UK. Online continues to be a key platform for our beauty brands and an area of investment. our online sales increased year on year to around 38% of our total beauty revenue. Adjusted operation profit for the region grew due to the revenue performance in the UK and increased profit in beauty driven by the improvement in margin. This was partially reduced by higher marketing investments, specifically on the Carex brand, with an increased marketing cost at point of sale. In Europe and America's adjusted operation margin was 23.3%, with the region delivering margin growth due to the reduction in promotional costs for hand wash and the positive impact on mix of sanitizer sales. In addition, beauty margins improved due to the increase in Saint-Tropez sales and higher sales of the Sanctuary Hero products mentioned. This growth in margin was largely offset by our decision to increase marketing investment together with the higher trade marketing costs in the UK. Please now turn to slide 8 and our Asia Pacific region. Revenue in Asia Pacific grew by 4.1% to 95.9 million, with adjusted operating profit at 11.7 million, an increase of some 48%. Cousins Baby market share in Indonesia continued to grow in key categories, and in Australia, Morning Fresh, together with our detergent brand Radiant, also grew market share. In Indonesia, revenue grew due to performance of Cousins Baby, and in Australia, revenue was also higher, driven by the home care brands and Rafferty's Garden. Adjusted operating profit of 11.7 million was driven by this growth in Indonesia, with improved mix leading to higher margins, and also in Australia, where revenue grew, promotional costs were lower than last year. This profit growth was also supported by some one-off costs incurred in the prior year in the export business. In Asia Pacific, adjusted operating margin increased to 12.2%. Now, turning to slide 7 and our last region, Africa. Revenue at 94.9 million grew by 5.8% versus last year, with adjusted operating profit increasing to 2.3 million. Morning Fresh continued to deliver both volume and price increases, with Cousins Baby returning to growth. Premier Core grew, supported by a product restage in the second half of last year, but there was a decline in the Premier Cool variant. Electricals revenue was higher, with price increases specifically across our core ranges of washing machines and fridges, offsetting volume decline. Overall, adjusted profit increased as a result of the higher revenue, with all operating units in Africa delivering a profit. This improvement was partially offset by transactional foreign exchange losses in Nigeria. These arise from the scarcity of hard currency in the market, leading to adverse financial impact in the conversion of Naira to US dollars. The first stage of our Nigeria simplification project was completed in these results, leading to redundancy costs and the closure of our retail operations of Cool World. In the second half, we'll continue to work on plans and activities to simplify our organization in Nigeria. Adjusted operation margin grew to 2.4%. Turning to slide 10 and our focus brand performance. Overall, as we have seen, the focus brands achieved growth of nearly 22% for the first half of the year, with 9 of our 14 brands growing. Carex was, of course, the key driver of results, but there was also progress in other key focus areas of hygiene, as illustrated in Morning Fresh, Baby with Cousins Baby, and in Beauty reflecting the Saint-Tropez results. As we see, though, there's work to do in some of our other focus brands. Over the next year, we'll seek to strengthen our plans on Sanctuary, Original Source, and Imperial Leather in particular. Turning now to slide 11, we look at the drivers of our revenue growth, reporting our volume and price mix for the first time externally. Given the nature of our business, we focus this price mix and volume analysis on the results by category, reviewing personal care, beauty, and home care. Turning to personal care, we have seen volume growth in total for our brands, led by Carex, allied to an improvement in price mix as a result of the reduction in promotional spend and strong emergence of the hand sanitizer business. In beauty, we have experienced overall volume decline associated with the UK high street, but this has been partially offset by the reduction in promotional spend, the move to online, and an improvement in our more premium Saint-Tropez business. Regarding home care, we've seen an increase in demand for our dishwasher and detergent brands, with a slight deterioration in price mix due to geographical sales and competition in detergents. Turning now to operating margin on slide 12. As we can see from slide 12, headline operating margin improves to 11.6%. We've seen an increase in trade margin with growth in all our business units. As we spoke in our Q1 trading update, there is a need to invest in our business and drive sustainable results in the future, and therefore we've seen investment across our business in H1. To this end, we saw an increase in our marketing investment, which now brings us to over 5% in terms of revenue. This is a significant increase from 2 years ago and last year. We have also invested primarily in our central capabilities in terms of digital, marketing, and people. In Nigeria, we are seeing liquidity issues in terms of converting our Naira receipts into US dollars. We've taken the decision to purchase US dollars at a higher rate than the official exchange rate in order to continue to mitigate the impact of currency risk and also drive down our external debt at the expense of profit results. Turning now to net debt on slide 13. Net debt has reduced to 18.2 million. The improvement is delivered through our stock reduction programs throughout the group, but particularly in Nigeria, and the change in debtors mix reflecting the importance of the UK. Together, these drive a significant benefit in working capital. There is a further contribution from the proceeds this half from the disposal of Nutrisima and the Polish brands. We've continued to maintain a low level of capital expenditure also. The net debt for H1 was flattered by the timing of the payment of the final dividend, which traditionally is paid in November, but given the timing of our year-end announcement, was paid this year in December. At Q1, we talked about the benefit and timing of VAT payments in the UK as part of COVID-19 support. In November, we repaid this amount earlier than due, and this is included in this set of results. And with that, I'll hand back to Jonathan.
Thanks, Alan. So let me now come on to provide an update on some other topics, including progress on the strategy renewal process that we've been engaged in, and also to give an outlook for the rest of this financial year. So if you move to slide 15, you'll see, first of all, dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic, that our approach has held us in good stead for the last 9 months. We continue to put our people first, and I have to say our workforce and employees around the world have really stepped up. And I'd like to take this opportunity to thank them all at what still remains a very difficult and challenging time for all of us. Right now, we're seeing varying levels of lockdown hitting our employees and the communities in which they live, with at one extreme, Australia gradually relaxing limitations, but Indonesia, Nigeria, the US, and of course, closer to home in the UK, all tightening restrictions one way or another, often at short notice. Despite this, we've been able to maintain good levels of customer service throughout, helped in part by investments we've made in manufacturing capacity, which have enabled us to reduce lead times and improve responsiveness. And not only have we been able to build back availability of all of our core SKUs, some of which we'd limited and constrained to help manage production capacity earlier in the pandemic, but we've also added new innovation too, helping consumers meet their changing hygiene needs on brands such as Carex in the UK or Morning Fresh in Australia. On top of securing the business, we've continued to play our part in the communities in which we live and work around the world. ranging from donations of liquid soap and hand gel to those in need, to providing hygiene and hand washing educational programs for schools to use to promote the right habits among children. As we approach 1 year of dealing with the impact of the pandemic, it remains a source of significant volatility for us in the short to midterm, posing risks in the form of disruption to some of our primary retail channels, especially on beauty, as well as in our supply chain, most notably the availability and cost of sea containers to and from China and other parts of Asia. Moving to slide 16, despite these challenges though, we have remained focused on taking the initial steps to turn the business around. It's going to be a multi-year effort, but we are pleased with the early progress. The organization has responded well to the challenge we set ourselves to deliver a fast start to the year, and we sustained it into the second quarter. The business momentum has also given us the chance to take a closer look at the business, reviewing the portfolio and continuing to make the priority choices, including investing more behind our focus brands, as well as completing divestitures where they made sense to allow us to focus on our core, most notably the completion of the Nutricima transaction that Alan mentioned. Meanwhile, we've been assembling the team that will lead the delivery of the turnaround, as I said at the beginning. We've also been changing who sits on that executive leadership team and how we work together. We now have the leaders of our top five businesses as part of the team. A year ago, they all reported through regional reporting lines, and we have worked to bring them together with the functional leaders to become a more integrated team that will jointly turn this business around. We've also put a lot of effort into building the capabilities we need to win. We've restructured how we support digital marketing and e-commerce, putting accountability firmly back into the markets. And as with the marketing capability program I mentioned earlier, we've put investment and management time into the early steps of establishing stronger revenue growth management capabilities to help us drive steady price mix improvement, which will then flow through to gross margin expansion. Finally, the executive leadership team has rallied around a comprehensive process to renew our company strategy so that we're more competitive in addressing changing dynamics and consumer habits in our markets so that we establish a track record of delivering reliable, profitable revenue growth. And that process is now nearing completion. So moving to slide 17, we'd like to announce and invite you to a Capital Markets Day on Thursday, the 25th of March, and we look forward to talking you through our new strategy for the next 3 to 5 years. Now, without stealing all of our thunder from the day, I would like to flag some of the choices we'll be talking about then. First of all, we're clear we should be in the business of building brands and using our strongest brands to reach and serve more consumers. We've defined our core as the hygiene, baby, and beauty categories, all of which offer attractive market growth trends for the future, and in which we already have market-leading brands in the top countries in which we operate. We'll shift our focus to a more consistent growth model to help us grow those leading brands, effectively fixing and strengthening our core, and then over time, looking to when and where to expand them to reach new consumers. And while not every brand in our portfolio will be overtly positioned as an eco brand, although there will be some for sure, we are determined to put sustainability at the heart of all that we do as a company. We'll seek ways to deliver for all stakeholders, including, of course, but not limited to our investors, and we will demonstrate our progress on this journey with external metrics. We know that to help achieve this, we're going to need to address some of the legacy challenges we face as a business. Despite recent improvements, we still work with a burden of complexity in our operations and our ways of working. So we're also kicking off a multi-stream program of interventions to enable us to deliver the changes needed. These changes will certainly involve doubling down on the capabilities we know we'll need to build or strengthen, but they'll also involve cultural change. On the one hand, building on and celebrating some of the rich aspects of our long history as a business, but on the other, also injecting renewed vigor and passion to help us unleash our potential. If you'd like to hear more, then please join us on March 25th. We look forward to seeing you there, unfortunately, albeit virtually this time. So finally then, moving to slide 18, let me give some comments on the balance of our financial year. As you know, we've achieved and maintained momentum in the first half, and we're working hard to continue it. In the second half, though, we're dealing with two main unknowns beyond the normal cycle of competitive activity, namely Brexit and COVID-19. So on Brexit, so far, we've seen only a small impact of the transition on our business, thanks in part to our supply chain setup. There has been some short-term disruption for some of our smaller suppliers shipping materials into the UK, but nothing significant, and our larger suppliers are performing well. We continue to ship finished products to EU and Northern Irish customers smoothly, and only a tiny fraction of our goods are subject to tariffs. Other dynamics could well emerge over time, but so far the transition has been manageable. The other unknown is more significant and more obvious. The exact impact of the COVID-19 pandemic is hard to predict. When and how the lockdowns will be relaxed is unclear, and they have a direct impact on some of our retail channels, such as beauty outlets in the US, curfews on modern trade stores in Indonesia, and the closure of hair salons across Western Europe. It's likely that consumer confidence and spending power could be hit if economies suffer or taxes start to be increased, but it's hard to predict when or how. And finally, we could see a continuation of some of the shorter-term cost pressures already mentioned. We're working hard to mitigate those, and we're working hard to support our business through this period of uncertainty, and we plan to continue to increase investment versus last year, both in brand building and in critical activities. And on this basis, assuming there's no material change to anticipated COVID restrictions or the resulting consumer behavior, we expect to perform in line with the current range of market expectations for this financial year. In summary, I'd like to say I was excited when I joined the PZ Cussons business last May, and I remain excited about the opportunities for the future. It will take time, but we've made a good start. So with that, let me conclude our prepared comments and thank you for your attention. We're keen to hear from you and to address your questions. So over to you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and one. And your first question comes from the line of Nicola Mallard from Investec. Your line is open. Please ask your question.
Hi, good morning, and thanks for a very thorough run-through there on the first half. A couple of questions, if I may. You gave us a Q1 update which showed 19% growth and the first half ahead by about 10%. Was there anything marked that changed in the second quarter by brand in particular behind that sort of apparent slowdown in Q2? And then secondly, I guess on the increase in investment that you've put into the business marketing and capabilities, I mean, one assumes obviously the capability costs will continue in the second half because this is largely sounds like people or process which will need to be there in future. But do we anticipate another step up in that sort of capability spend in future years? And also the same for marketing. So Alan mentioned that we're now at the sort of 5% level. Is that the level you want to be at, or do you perceive that it needs to be higher? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Nicola. I'll take your thorough as a compliment, not saying we droned on too long, but hopefully I'll address your questions now. So let me deal with the question on Q2 slower than Q1. So we saw a couple of dynamics in play. I would say, first of all, some of the peak consumption levels of the hygiene-related brands at the height of the pandemic, if you think back to next summer, definitely mitigated. Yet we did continue to see demand for whether it be washing up liquids in Australia or for the liquid soap or sanitizer gel categories in the UK still way ahead of pre-COVID levels, just not at quite the spike that we saw in the first quarter. What we don't know, of course, is how much those demand levels will vary as we work through the second half. As I said, lockdowns have a big impact as to whether, for example, you're using sanitizer gel when you're out on the go or whether you're using liquid soap and washing up liquid when you're back at home. What I would say, though, in connecting it a bit with your second question, we're trying to have some influence on that outcome by making sure we are taking the opportunity to invest in our leading brands so that we drive top-of-mind awareness and we drive household penetration. So what that means for future investment levels is we'll continue to look at investing in capabilities. I wouldn't necessarily expect a dramatic increase in capability investment, but what I will say is we'll invest what we believe it takes to make the progress we need to in the areas of, for example, digital marketing, e-commerce, revenue growth management, even sustainability. But on the marketing spend, I would say we would aim to look at what's the competitive level required for a given category in a given country. I mean, I think it's well understood that, for example, home care brands would often have a lower level of marketing spend than, for example, beauty care brands, especially in more developed beauty care markets. And so we should expect to see a range of levels of marketing spend across our brands, but we want to make sure that we're competitive for the given category and the given market. So hopefully that answers the question.
Thank you very much. It does, yeah.
Thanks, Nicola.
And your next question comes from the line of Damien McNeela from Numis. Your line is open. Please ask your question.
Hi, good morning, everybody.
Hi, Damien.
Yeah, hi there. Couple of questions. I think in your prepared remarks, you sort of indicated focus will be on baby beauty and hygiene. You've obviously got a couple of food brands in Australia, and they're classed as focus brands, I think, or sort of Rafferty's Garden is. I mean, can you see you sort of building on food, or should that be seen as non-core? And then I guess that it kind of follows on from that, given how well the balance sheet looks, should we be expecting PZ to be making acquisitions, or is it a little bit too early in the turnaround to be thinking about sort of adding on new brands?
Okay, so let me try to deal with those two, Damien. First of all, you know, without teasing you, we'll tell you an awful lot more at the Capital Markets Day. So I don't want to rehash everything today that hopefully we'll be talking to you about on the day. But by declaring part of our business is core, obviously it declares that some other parts of our business are not. That doesn't mean that they don't have a role to play or that we don't have clear plans for them. But if we want to get our business back to steady, reliable growth, we've got to get, if you like, the beating heart of the center of the business into good shape and then into better shape over time. If I can nitpick a little bit, then you know, you could argue Rafferty's Garden is baby, but we'll talk a bit more about that at the Capital Markets Day. And then overall, what we'll explain is what we're thinking for the role, for the brands that are in our focus brands, and how we intend to evolve the definition of our core brands for the future. So there'll be a little bit more to come on that. And then in terms of, you know, does this balance sheet help us think about acquisitions? Well, the first thing the balance sheet does is help us get through the demands of a crisis and to, you know, help us with being resilient. What we're trying to define for our strategy is an organic story that does not rely on an acquisition to deliver that kind of sustainable, profitable revenue growth I talked about. What we are not doing is ruling out an acquisition, and if the right acquisition is available at the right time, critically at the right value, then it could absolutely be part of the plan. But what we are not suggesting is that the medicine that we need to take is to rush out and buy something else versus actually make progress on fixing our core first.
That's great. Thank you, Jonathan.
Thanks.
And your next question comes from the line of Darren Shirley from Shore Capital. Your line is open. Please ask your question.
Yeah, morning all. Thank you. A few for me, if you don't mind. It sounds as if you've made some reasonably fundamental changes to the way the executive team operates. I think you're talking about five business heads now on the exec board, I think you said. I mean, can you just give us an idea of who now sits on that board and sort of what benefits you think the new structure will bring over the medium term? Second one would be on net debt. Great to see the progress there. Nice to see the benefits in there in working capital. I mean, how much of that is, I mean, where are we sitting now in Nigeria, Ree, the port situation? That's been a challenge over the last couple of years. Has that been the driver of that working capital improvement, or is that maybe a prize to come if things ever sort of normalise there? And then the last one is, you talked about making the first stage of sort of changes in Nigeria, the structural changes there. I mean, can you give us a bit more colour on, again, on what you've done there and what the benefits will be? I'll leave you that
there. So why don't I cover the first, and then I'll hand over to Alan to cover the net debt, sure. And then specifically the actions in Nigeria, some of which are attached to some charges that we've taken in the numbers. So on the executive leadership team, what we've tried to do is cut through the layers in the organization in order to accelerate partly decision-making, but actually even more so improve levels of ownership and accountability so that, you know, where I've tried to set out that we're, you know, trying to attack things with a sense of renewed pace and agility, that we're able to do it by, as a team, working much more hand in glove. So the five markets that we now have represented on the leadership team are four geographic markets, so Australia, New Zealand, Indonesia and the balance of Asia, Africa, our UK personal care business, and then our beauty business, which is the only one that's not defined geographically, but because we run it as a separate operation. So we have, if you like, the voice of the market now has a greater share of the leadership team shareable, which I think is an important message to send. But more importantly, what we're doing is breaking down some silos. We used to work things quite vertically, and we're really trying to create a leadership team here where everyone wears two hats. They are responsible for delivering the results for which they're accountable in their business unit or in their function. And then at the same time, we want everyone to be involved in steering the group to the sustained turnaround that we need to deliver, which occasionally might mean that one business or one function has got to swallow hard and take one for the team in order to help someone else out. But that's the interdependence that we're trying to create. So, Alan, over to you on the net debt.
Thanks, Jonathan. Hi, Darren. So if we look specifically on Nigeria, you asked the question. So there's a few elements, okay? So the first is in Q4 last year, we used the COVID-19 epidemic just to reduce the stock in trade because we saw a lot of risk at that time. I talked about an early collection of debtors. So we've now got levels of stock in trade that we're happy with, and it means we get paid quicker, so that's good. The second area is we've constrained the SKUs in electricals. So electricals used to have many offers, and that was part of the reason of having shops. So we've now reduced that an awful lot in terms of the SKUs just to focus on the high margin goods, and that's the second reason, and that's generating cash for us, but also at a lower stock. And then the third area is we've reduced CapEx investment across Nigeria, and we are running it for cash more. So there are the three reasons around Nigeria. Coming back specifically to the port, I would see the port as there's been no major change in port. We've now actually got port issues in some other areas with higher supply chain costs, as you know. But in Nigeria, I would take this as part of operating, and if it does change, it'll be a nice surprise.
Yeah, very clear. Thank you. And in terms of the third question, in terms of what sort of structural changes you're already putting through in Nigeria, could you give us a bit more colour?
Yeah. So in terms of what we did in H1, we obviously, once we started constraining the SKUs in electricals to focus on cash, there was no point having retail operations because you couldn't offer the full portfolio. And also, it's not something that we excel in. So we've closed down our retail operations on electricals in Nigeria. That was called Cool World. And for last year, we announced a management reduction. And this year we went a level down in November just to reduce the size. And that was roughly 10% of the non-management population left. So that's what went out in November. So there are the two areas that we've taken in this set of results in terms of cost.
Okay, very clear. Thanks. Thanks, guys.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and one. And your next question comes from the line of Alicia Forty from Investec. Your line is open. Please ask your question.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Just wanted to press a little bit more on Nigeria since we're on the topic. I think you took some price increases last year. Just curious how that's you know, flowing through. Is that has that been successful? Any update on sort of you know, the brand?
Yes, so Alicia, let me take that, and then if Alan has anything to add,
sure,
we can hand over to Alan. So yes, you're right. We did take some price increases last year, and as I'm sure you know from having followed PZ Customs for a while, when you deal with pricing in developing markets, which involve multi-layers of distribution from distributor to wholesaler to end retailer, it can be a precarious journey, and we saw some progress in the execution, but we also saw some of the challenges that one normally encounters, where you see a short-term halt in volume and demand, which then begins to settle itself out. And so we have seen progress made on price and mix in our Nigeria business, as we have not only been able to flow through some of the price increases that we needed to cover some of the inflationary costs we were seeing, but we've also seen an increased ability to do it with minimal or with reduced risk of that volume disruption. And certainly, as we look at our pricing actions more recently than in the middle of last year, we've seen better progress made on the, if you like, the smoothness of the execution. But I don't think you can ever declare it's a job done, and you need to continue to learn how to do these things, not least because it's a highly competitive environment, not just from multinationals who are trying to execute price increases, but also local players who are often trying to offer better value at lower price points. So you have to walk that tightrope very carefully. But so far, progress made.
That's very encouraging. Thank you. And then just the supply chain appointment. Would this suggest that you perhaps see some opportunities within your supply chain for improvement? And if so, can you elaborate?
Yeah, well, we are certainly not lacking the humility to say that our supply chain doesn't have scope for improvement. I think every supply chain has scope for improvement. My flippant answer to you would be that the previous incumbent was in the role for 30 years, so I think he'd earned it, or sorry, was in the company for 30 years, so he'd earned a well-deserved retirement. But of course, with a change of leadership, you bring fresh pairs of eyes, and in particular, Steve's experience, not just 5 or so years at PZ Customs, but actually at L'Oreal and the Body Shop previously. He brings a sharp level of expertise that will enable us to make some changes to our supply chain operation. I've already been impressed with the fact that we are not overly beholden to any one model. We're willing to source externally. We're willing to manufacture internally. But we know that we are going to have to deal with some potential cost pressures in the future, and we'll be looking to supply chain to help us mitigate those, not only through better procurement, but in general, better execution of our supply chain plan through the overall function.
No question at this time, but once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and one. And we've got one question from comes from the line from Darren Shirley from Shore Capital. Your line is open. Please ask your question.
Yeah, thanks again. While we've got you, I think I'll have another one if that's okay. In terms of Imperial Leather, it looks as if the availability that was constrained in the period. Can you just tell us, what was the situation there? Was that an internal issue or sort of an external supply issue? And can you give us some confidence that that's sort of fully resolved?
Yeah, so I'm glad you're coming back for more, Darren. I thought it was going to be a really hard one, but it was just a suitably hard one. So let me deal with this one. So Imperial Leather is obviously an important brand for us with an amazing history. In the grips of the toughest weeks and months of the early pandemic, we had to make some priority calls about which products we were going to prioritize in order to meet the, frankly, unprecedented levels of consumer demand. I mean, you'll remember many empty shelves of many of our competitors' products. And the supply chain team here did a very good job of prioritizing Carex, which was the brand that obviously has the best protection credentials as well as caring. So it's a very unique sweet spot in the hand wash market. And so when it came to real squeezes in terms of bottles and in particularly pumps, we prioritized Carex over Imperial Leather. And therefore, we effectively turned off Imperial Leather liquid soaps, for example, for a period of time. It was very much our own choice based around being able to access and procure, you know, reliable sources of supply when everyone around the world was doing it. You know, we're back in great shape now. We're back producing all the different lines. It takes a little bit of time to build back the distribution points in the retail trade, so we're not necessarily back at the same levels of distribution. But we have great hopes for Imperial Leather. I would say it's one of the brands that needs more work than some of the others in terms of really defining what's the consumer proposition and the brand equity for the future. What we know today is it has a very loyal user base. What we want to do is be able to unlock new target consumers in the future, and that's going to involve at the right time getting out into market with a refreshed brand proposition. We're just not quite there yet.
Okay. I promise I'll leave you alone now.
Bye-bye. Good. Thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Mark Webb from Quaero Capital. Your line is open. Please ask your question.
Yeah, good morning, Jonathan and all. Good figures. Thank you very much, and particularly on the balance sheet. I wonder whether you can just remind us. I mean, we saw, of course, the first half is growing less than the first quarter. Can you just remind us on an organic basis what was the progression in Q2? And secondly, we're halfway through Q3. I think can you help us understand a little bit more how trading is in this quarter in terms of we're returning to the lockdowns, particularly in the UK. Does that mean Carex sales are multiplied by 20 or so and the other businesses are lower? Or is this lockdown trading different this time? Thanks.
Okay, so I don't think we actually release specific quarterly numbers beyond. So we'll report a Q1 and then we report a first half. You can obviously do some the trend lines as you've been doing. But what I would say is that we have seen, you know, some of the spikes of the pandemic demand settling, still at above pre-COVID levels, but not at as the, if you like, the burning heat of some of the, I wouldn't say panic buying, because it was less so on our categories versus some of the paper businesses, for example. But we've seen some slowdown in the market. But by slowdown, I mean still growing at accelerated double-digit rates, but just maybe not quite as high as they were back in the summer of last year. As we move into the second half and current trading, you know, in many ways our portfolio has some natural hedges in it, but sometimes the interventions and the dynamics are not equal. So what we are currently seeing is obviously volatility most closely linked to the imposition of lockdowns. And in some cases, that changes consumer habits. The best example would be if you're working from home, you're less likely to be using a sanitizer gel because you're not on the go to the bus, to the cinema, to the office, right? But you may be more likely to use a soap. And so that's meaning that we're having to remain incredibly agile in which parts of our portfolio we're activating to try and meet consumer needs. You know, that's a challenge, as you can imagine, at relatively short notice. And then the other parts of our business where maybe we see lower levels of category demand is because the retail channels have effectively been closed or curtailed. You know, if you think department stores in the US, where Saint Tropez is a big part of our business in the US, selling through department stores. Yeah, we have a brand, hair care brand called Fudge that is uniquely sold or exclusively sold in hair salons across Western Europe, all of which are currently closed. Right, so we're having to navigate the volatility of that situation. So we're working hard to maintain some momentum. We are working hard to invest so that we are building our brand equities at a time when consumers are looking for the brands they know and trust. But the best way for me to summarize it is that, you know, in currently, as best we understand the lockdown implications right now, we're on track for the range of guidance that's out there in the market.
Yeah. That's great. Thank you very much.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and one.
So let's assume there are no more questions, shall I then? And maybe if I just give a closing remark. I know we'll be talking to a few of you later today over the coming days, so thank you for your support and interest. Obviously, we have got off to a good start, but really it's only the initial steps of a turnaround that's going to take quite some time to deliver. And we're looking forward to talking to as many of you as possible on the 23rd of March, when we'll tell you more about how we're going to do that. Thank you very much.
And so this concludes our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect. Speakers, please stand by.